Welcome to the Zombies Government New Podcast, where we're throwing grenades of liberty into statist foxholes and smiting social justice warriors wherever they are. And I'm David.
I'm Weston.
And here we are, man. Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho. Christmas episode.
Middle of December. So, tis the season. You know what time it is.
That's right. So what do you want for Christmas?
I want liberty.
World peace.
Yeah.
You want world peace?
I could hear it. I could hear you wanted to say
well,
it.
Well, you know, everyone wants peace all over the world, but how do you make that happen?
That's right.
Ask Donald Trump. He's got all the answers.
He does.
No, you know, I want liberty, man. I want everyone to have as much freedom as possible. So, you know, because that's the gift that keeps on giving.
It is.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
But I'd also settle for a PS4 right now, or so I could play some Fallout 4 or Battlefront.
Yep, I've been looking at the PS4s myself. I've had a lot of problems in my household with too much video gaming going on with the kids.
Oh, yeah.
Battle between the parents and the children.
It's the
ongoing.
The never-ending struggle, dude. Right?
So we kind of decided we weren't going to do more video game systems.
Yeah, can't encourage them.
But now I'm seeing some of the games and I'm like, wait, I want that game. Yeah. I want to play that in my house.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll make an exception for that.
Right. So now I'm seriously considering getting another PlayStation so I can finish the Uncharted series and
yeah,
play some Star Wars Battlefront.
Nice, man. Yeah, I don't know. I've got my 360. That thing is a workhorse. I've had it for years, but I just don't play anymore, man. I don't have the time. And
I don't either.
Usually, if it's on, we're streaming, you know, movies or whatever, you know, Hulu, something like that.
Yep, that's what ours mostly do, too, is just run Netflix.
So, yeah.
Run Ninja Turtle cartoons over and over and over and over.
So, if anybody wants to contribute to the... buy Dave a PS4.
You can donate to... here's the account number.
Yeah, hashtag please donate. We'll get it set up here. Maybe, you know, do some Bitcoin or PayPal or Proteon or something. We'll see. Or Patreon.
That's a great idea.
Patreon, that's the word I was looking for. So,
that's a great idea.
Yeah, I'm just joking.
You need to get a dirt bike so you can come ride with me.
Dude. So I can hurt myself?
Well, maybe.
I'd love to, bro. It'd be awesome.
Me and the boy went out Saturday.
Yeah, that's the best time. It's great right now.
It was raining and muddy and freezing cold. Well,
it's perfect weather right now in your life.
Freezing cold is relative for us here
in
Arizona.
Oh, yeah, it was.
But it felt cold to us. Yeah. Although we were riding out this trail. We went about 12 miles out, and we were just under a snow line. There was some snow being laid down in the desert out there.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, so... it was fairly cold for Arizona.
I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's many more things that are more majestic or just beautiful than snow in the desert. Because you know, it's you don't see it a lot, man.
No, you don't. Every once in a while, we'll see that here, and it really does look beautiful, just laid out across the cactus and.
Yeah, it's such a weird juxtaposition.
Yeah,
you know, like a
yeah.
One year we went up to Monument Valley, and. It was probably around Christmas time or New Year's. And, dude, you know, it's such an amazing, peaceful scene up there, but it was all capped in snow.
Oh, yeah.
And it was awesome.
That would be
it looked
amazing.
So rad, man.
That would be amazing.
So,
yeah, we were just behind the Superstition Mountains. If anyone's ever seen those, they're just really spectacular, towering red rock at the edge of the Phoenix.
Yeah, I'd love to have a dirt bike, man, and get out there with you.
Well, but, they're not too unreasonable. You pick up an old one.
I spend all my money on...
8 or 10 years old.
I pretty much spend all my money on craft beer and podcasting equipment.
That's so, reasonable, too.
You know, which you wouldn't think I do because it's been a few weeks since I had an episode out. But, you know, it's a bit, dude. I work in retail, and this time of year, it's a bit nutty.
Right. Craziness out
there. Bedlam.
Craziness. Yeah, we used to go out. Me and my wife used to go out on Black Friday and try to pick things up. But hopefully, maybe someone out there can hear the wisdom that I've learned
from my
over
mistakes.
The years is that you get all excited about some price that they have listed for Black Friday. You go out and fight and wait and camp for whatever price. And several weeks later, the price is still that same
they
price.
Yeah.
It's still there. There's
or
no
Cyber
reason.
Monday, it's lower.
Or Cyber on, Monday, it might be lower. Or
Amazon. Or
I mean, the PS4 thing was all over the place. $299. You got to get it on Black Friday. Everybody's looking for the PS4.
Yeah.
Now every PS4 all over town's $299. So it's the same.
Yep.
Made no difference. You didn't have to go. And there's stacks of them.
Yeah.
Down at Best Buy.
Almost handing them away. Yeah. You know, handing them out at the door.
So don't kill yourself on Black Friday. It's not worth it.
Yeah, I think more, you know. Actually, I read that, like, this year. And you're probably right. They are phasing it or spreading it out more. That sales for Black Friday were down by, like, $1 billion or, you know what I mean? But
wow.
I just think, I don't know. I think, like I said, I think the industry was trying to, like, spread it out more. It wasn't just one day. It was, like you said.
Right.
There was big deals on that day, but they also had those prices before and after.
Right.
So.
Right.
And
well,
I think
it's
a lot
still
more,
ongoing.
I think the whole way of shopping, the whole paradigm is changing with people being able to shop on almost any format, dude, with your smartphone, a tablet.
Sure.
You know, obviously on your computer, you know, so.
Absolutely. That is definitely a different world.
Brick and mortar is in trouble.
That's right.
For the most part, some of them, you know.
Well, they at least can't. They can't advertise some price and trick you into believing that they've got this special price going on that you need to be down there camping out to
people
win
still
this
do
price.
It though, dude. There was a guy here in Phoenix somewhere that did it. He was like a week camped out for a week at Best Buy. You know what I mean?
What was he after? Did they say?
I don't know, dude. I was like, you're an idiot. I'm not even gonna bother.
I know.
Dude.
As soon as I hear the
they're
beginning
all interviewing
of a story,
him, you know, it's like don't.
Right.
Don't feed into it. Don't give them any, you know what I mean?
Whenever I hear the beginning of a story that starts like that, I'd never finish reading it. I'm just like, oh
God.
Here's another idiot.
Nope. Next.
Yeah, that's exciting. Exciting. So, you know, we had discussed briefly before we started some of the, what we wanted to discuss about Christmas.
Yeah.
That might relate to our podcast title here.
Zombie.
More than other topics, zombies, the government.
Well, Black Friday, dude. That's, I mean, come on. If you, if well, people streaming through the door, trampling other
that's
people.
True. No, that's, I know, that's absolutely
to
true.
Get to something, isn't an apt analogy for,
right.
For a zombie apocalypse?
Very good topic.
I don't know what is.
That's right. That's
it. But,
that's
you know,
very
it's an easy
topic,
one to make.
A relevant topic.
Yeah. I don't know.
But, so, on the, but what we discussed that we wanted to talk about or that I wanted to talk about was a transformation that my kids had in what they were looking for Christmas.
Yeah.
Based on their viewing experience on TV. So when I was in medical school, we never had cable or satellite or anything. We didn't have commercial. We had the internet because I basically needed the internet to be able to study at home. And so we had Netflix, and the kids were able to be on Netflix and watch their little kid shows and all these things all
right.
the time. So later on, I was at an unnamed membership club supermarket type place and ended up getting talked into signing up for one of these TV services. And so now I'm stuck with 2 years of regular television with commercials. So anyway...
Any regrets while we're talking?
Hugely.
About, yeah, okay.
Hugely.
You'd cut that cord again? Because I talked about that at one of my first shows. And
absolutely. I feel like you get very, very little benefit from having that connection to TV. I will say that I regularly watch Jimmy Fallon and occasionally catch a little Stephen Colbert. Ugh. And outside of that... I watch no broadcast television.
Yeah. Is that just because
I watch movie channels? And it's probably partly because of my schedule and...
Or just the content or lack thereof.
I just have no interest in most of it. Now, you know, don't get me wrong. I love my shows, you know.
Oh yeah.
I'm watching Gotham. I'm watching Walking Dead. I'm watching these shows, but I'm watching them on Netflix. I'm not ever watching them on TV. Mm-hmm. So, and I love good entertainment. I love good artistic presentation of the story, you know, and the hero, and I love it. But I don't like TV, and I don't like the commercialism that's blatant in your face.
Right.
So I like the commercialism that's hidden within the television show.
Yeah. The product, the cleverly placed product yeah. or, you know. This, it's like that scene. I always think of that scene from Wayne's World where they're like, we'll never sell out. Yeah.
Little yellow.
I can't talk about it. It's giving me a splitting headache. But contractor, no, I will never bow to any sponsor. holding up the pizza slice. So how's that affecting your kids this merry, merry Christmas?
Well, so, you know, previous Christmases, now they were a little bit younger, but I really think there was a difference because of what they were exposed to. And they had, you know, previously, you know, Christmas comes around, what do you want? You know, oh, I want a soccer ball. I want a bike. I want these things that you do that kids like to do. They do things at recess at school, things they do with other kids. I want to do that so I can do that with these kids. And since we got the TV, well, and not only to go back, they also had very short Christmas lists. There might be 3 or 4 items on this Christmas list, and that was about it. That's what they wanted. Immediately, the first Christmas we had following having TV, which was only a couple of months, we got the TV, a couple of months later was Christmas. Every kid had this enormous Christmas list.
It jumped to like a book, a novel.
Oh, yeah.
Novel-y.
Well, you know, it was these, they got these long,
yeah,
I don't know, 12 to 15 item lists. And everything on it is some piece of crap off of some commercial, some junky, crappy toy.
Right.
That they want. I really want this. And I've been watching this, and they see the commercial. Every time the commercial comes on, they come and talk about it. Like
crack
it
cocaine.
It completely changed what they were viewing as what their wants and desires were. Completely transformed. Hmm. And so I, you know, I have this 2-year contract. So whether or not I have the TV on, and obviously every parent has the choice to turn off the TV. But the reality is it's really just not happening.
No, it's not. Well, and then it's not even just on TV now, like YouTube, you know, all the, you know.
Yeah, they get interrupted with commercials and things. But not so much as like if they're on the Nickelodeon channel or the Disney channel.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And it's kids' shows and they know their audience is kids. And every commercial is based on Christmas, I swear. It's just toy after toy after toy. These simple little things that gets the kids excited and they want to ask their parent for it.
Yep.
It's amazing. It's calculated.
That's why I'm glad I stayed a cord cutter.
Well,
you know, in some ways. Yeah, you know, Hulu, my kids are super into Hulu now because, you know, there's newer shows or, you know, other networks that aren't available on like Netflix or whatever. So, and they have some ads, but, you know, I couldn't imagine the
Yeah, they don't get like the 5 or 6 every 7 minutes.
Right.
Five or six different toys every 7 minutes. There. It's just. It's insane.
This makes it our job to say no, right?
Right.
I guess.
It is, but at the same time, you know, you think about your own childhood. You have the sentimental of your drive that you remember your childhood and Christmas and the things that you loved about Christmas and you see your kid and this thing they want and they work hard in school and they're doing a good job.
They're good kids.
They're good kids. They basically behave when they're not trying to kill each other. And you want them to get something every once in a while. And Christmas comes, it's that excuse to not buy it for them other times.
Right.
Well, Christmas, ask for Christmas, you know. But you want to get them more valuable things. Like a bike or a soccer ball or something that they're going to go do and use for a long time.
Yeah, not just another electronic.
That's going to be gone in days.
Yeah.
You know, I can't.
Yeah, we struggled for a long time with like whether we're going to get an iPod for, you know, one of our kids. And, you know, she's at a good age, but
it's, yeah, I've got three kids asking for iPods.
It's like, oh, man, you know.
Yeah.
Then you got to limit it. And
Macintosh has definitely made a more expensive Christmas.
Macintosh? Whoa, dude, you just like totally dated yourself right there, man.
Purposely.
There's so many people that are like scratching their heads like, Macintosh?
I almost said Apple, and then I was like, I'm not going to say Apple. I'm going to say Macintosh.
Don't give them any more free publicity, right? Like they need it. The most profitable company right now, but.
Yeah, they've certainly got into. You can't argue with what the product they've created.
Yeah,
it's amazing. If I would have had a way to listen to any music I could possibly think of,
yeah,
when I was a kid, way into music
or podcasts,
any podcast you can find.
Especially this
one. Would love to have had that. You know, definitely had a Walkman when the Walkman came out, and it was amazing to me.
And that was a big deal. You know, remember that.
It was.
Because they weren't cheap, and, you know, they were pretty easy to break, I think.
They're still not cheap.
Yeah.
I found a dang tape Walkman, a cassette Walkman, or a radio Walkman the other day. They still want $40 for the stupid thing.
Like a new, is it like a vintage one, or?
No, like an actual new, they still make it.
Oh, wow.
They're not as easy to find.
Well, yeah,
but,
in the niche.
But they're around,
there.
Like some exercise person, you know, needs a little radio or something that.
The guy that just can't let go of the...
Yeah.
Couldn't even get the CDs.
You know, I've still got a lot of tapes. I don't want to rebuy this stuff.
Yeah, come on, man.
Let me use these tapes.
How have you not worn them out? You know?
No kidding.
You know what I mean? But, yeah. Maybe you bought a bunch of copies. Maybe he saw what was coming. He's like, I'm going to stock up on these tapes.
Right.
You know?
These wear out. I need to have a few.
Yeah, for when the format changes.
Oh, crap. Yeah, it's interesting... Format changes. I was looking at that the other day because my wife has actually been looking for a CD player cassette tape boombox.
Nice.
For the kids because she's got these old tapes.
Oh, sure.
Some little books on tape that she's got that she wants the kids to listen to. And so, you know, we've found some CD boomboxes for a pretty reasonable price. But the one that we have found that has a tape player, CD player, that will actually do that stuff is $60 for this stupid little boombox. Like, it's a tiny little piece of junk. $60.
Well, like your CDs, dude. You know, I don't want to get all technical. You can't convert those to MP3.
CD,
upload
you can.
Them to something.
CD, you can.
But not tapes.
But the tape, I'm sure you can if you buy the right piece
of
equipment.
But then how much is that a piece of equipment going to buy?
Right. Right.
Anyway. So,
do you rebuy everything?
TVs.
Some of the book formats haven't come onto the audiobook format yet. Some of the ones she's got that she wants the kids to hear. And so I was like, well, okay, we can either rebuy all the CDs and have them be outdated. I guess we can convert those, like you say, if we buy the CDs.
Mm-hmm.
But we've already got the tapes. We've already spent a bunch of money on the tapes as they came out, like 6 books in the series. And
yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, man.
Anyway.
So what other exciting. Christmas traditions you got going?
Christmas traditions.
Like, do you do the Elf on the Shelf?
No.
No?
No.
Why not?
Do you?
Yeah, I got mixed feelings about it. You know, it's kind of fun and cute. But is it...
I don't know. Maybe we're bad parents.
Is there a darker underbelly to it? Is it teaching your kids to...
I don't know.
A surveillance state, you know?
That is funny.
Better behave because you're
always being watched.
Yeah.
Don't forget. Santa's watching
No,
you.
But I mean, if you really think about it, it's kind of, you know. It's
no, that's an interesting twist on it. We don't do anything like that in our house. We occasionally will say something when the kids are really being bad, like, you know, Santa's watching. I don't know if you're going to get all the presents you want.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see the look on my kid's face, and they somehow know it's an empty threat.
They're like, yeah, whatever. Fat man's bringing it, or,
yeah,
you know.
So, I don't know.
They'll be hell to pay.
I don't have any... You know, one of the traditions in our house is my wife making goodies for the neighbors. That's pretty standard.
Nice.
I know your
oh,
wife's
yeah.
doing that, too.
Absolutely. Neighborly.
It's funny how we're both like, so old school still. Yeah, the wife's baking in the kitchen.
Yeah.
She's going to take care of the Christmas traditions.
I got my scotch in the study.
We'll be in here podcasting.
I'm listening to my my tapes.
Doing the man stuff.
I got my Walkman on. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll be in here doing man stuff. You take care of the Christmas goodies.
Okay, well, I had a thought, like, what if the elf on the shelf fails? Do you automatically up the ante to Krampus? You know what I mean? like you said.
Maybe we should. I do want to see that movie, by the way. We should go see it.
The new one? Yeah. There's been a few made. I don't really watch a lot of them. But
I don't think I've ever seen any
of
them.
It seems like this one's kind of getting a little more funding or a weight behind it. But
something.
Yeah, you know, like, hey, kids aren't behaving. Elf on the Shelf's, you know, not working anymore.
Let's watch this movie. Hey, kids, I got a movie to watch tonight. This is just to teach you about Christmas.
Yeah, this is what's going to happen if you think Santa's bad. Wait till Krampus comes.
That's awesome. Yeah, that would be a good tradition.
What about Christmas movies, dude? Speaking of Christmas movies, what you guys got a go-to or a favorite? What's the best one? Okay, family-wise, what do you guys go for?
Family-wise, my wife kind of dictates, and we have been watching Elf.
Ah, I love it.
Which is brilliant. Just hilarious. Just
oh yeah,
amazing.
That's classic.
But you know, the go-tos are always a part of the Christmas repertoire. The family vacation or vacation.
Yes.
Christmas vacation.
Christmas. I know what you meant. Yeah.
And A Christmas Story. You know, classic stuff.
Yeah.
Always becomes a part of the season. I got the kids, so I've got the old version and the new version of the Grinch going it from time to time. I got the old Rudolph puppet thing.
Yeah, I love Elf. Obviously A Christmas Story, dude. Home Alone. Love Home Alone.
Oh yeah,
man.
Home Alone. I forgot about Home Alone.
Ah, so funny.
And yeah, that's
those
good.
Are like movies there's like a movie you can't make these days because cell phone, you know what I mean? Like the technology, that's like one example of it. Like the technology has changed so much, you know what I mean? Like
right.
That would have never happened, you know.
Right.
Not that it probably would have happened back then, but obviously, it's, you know.
But it was something that could happen in the hustle and bustle.
Yeah, you know, but her waiting on, you know, trying to wait on a payphone or not right. being able to get a hold of them.
Oh, the payphone.
You know, yeah. I always look at that. I'm like, oh, you know, when this movie was made, because there's a fucking
payphone right.
in it.
That's right, there's a payphone.
Which, how many
I always, whenever I see or hear the word payphone, I think about Futurama. There's an episode where Hermes, him and Bender, I think, are out somewhere. And they're in this old town, and they're looking for something, and they come across a phone booth, this old phone booth.
Yeah.
And Hermes is like, they have a booth for this? Why am I carrying around this stupid cell phone? Chucks it in the garbage.
Nice. I love Futurama.
Booths.
But, yeah, you know what I mean? It's
yeah, totally different.
And bad
culture change.
Have you watched Bad Santa recently?
That's I don't know if I've seen Bad Santa.
Oh,
I know what
to.
It is, but I don't think I've ever watched it.
It's amazing. It's not, yeah, don't watch that one with the kids.
Okay. Yeah. I figured.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
That's good. I'll have to check it out.
After the kids go to bed, you know, you get some eggnog or, you know.
Is that the Billy Bob Thornton one?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
I've seen clips of it from, you know, just when it's on during the season.
We'll have to watch it sometime, man.
That's a good idea.
Get some eggnog, you know,
uh-huh.
and just let it rip. It's amazing.
Christmas. So presents on Christmas Eve?
One.
No.
Yeah.
One.
Do like one. You know, usually it's not.
We do that too.
Yeah.
Do you choose it?
For the kids?
Yeah.
You know, you're not
you choose
letting
the
them.
Present?
You know what they'd go for.
Yeah.
The big one. Or
of course.
Whatever. No, you give them like, you don't give them like.
Pajamas.
Yes. Maybe like a little toy or doll, you know, but
ours,
you don't let them get
do the pajamas.
Yeah. You want to totally let them down, but you want to get, you know, give them a little bit of a push till the next morning.
Well, you want them to be in their nice new pajamas for the picture.
Yeah, that
you don't
makes
want
sense.
Them in their raggedy old pajamas that they've been riding bikes in for a year.
I like where your head's at.
That's what we usually do.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid. We had a Christmas party. It was probably the first year we ever did the Christmas Eve gift thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they let us pick. You know, we just grabbed a present or whatever and picked. And
I got some little thing, a Matchbox car, or some other little toy. And one of my little sisters, she was dead set on this one gift. And I remember my parents going, no, no, you don't want that one. Choose another one. And she was dead set. She opened it. She opened it up and she's all, socks with. Starts crying.
Yeah, we tried to tell you.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we picked the gift. They all open pajamas.
Put them on, get to bed. Dad can watch Bad Santa.
That's right. Because that's what I do on Christmas Eve.
Assemble a bunch of stuff.
Sit around watching movies.
Right. Because there's nothing else to do. There's no other, you know, things to build or, you know.
We're getting better at that, you know.
Yeah.
Getting better at that kind of thing. But most of the junk now just comes ready to go in the box. Insert one AA battery and it's good to go for an hour. And then you throw it away.
Gotta love capitalism, man. Gotta love the free market. Free market.
Yep. Things used to be built better, though.
Well, yeah.
That's one sad thing. But it needs to break down or you're not going to buy another one.
Yeah, planned obsolescence, man.
That's right. What else? What else goes on with Christmas? Charity? Refugees? Taking care of refugees?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Does that go along with Christmas?
Yeah. Depends on who you ask.
That's right.
I mean, are you talking about the Syrian flavor? Or
sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, man. It's build a wall, bro.
What are we meant to think about that?
Build a wall. No, don't. I'm joking. I'm parroting Trump, just not very well.
Well, yeah. Build the wall.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Huge. It'll be huge.
This guy. Speaking of internet and cord cutting and this is Trump. This is the guy that wants to. He says close up the internet, right? Like. I know we're not dovetailing into this very well, but, you know, you brought up refugees and opening your home or your heart. And, you know, I just think it's so horrible and sad that he's using these attacks or whatnot, you know, to kind of advocate for less and less freedom or more and more state control to...
Well, and it's interesting to me to see... the wildly conservative type Republican candidate speaking on government, larger government control in an environment, well, in a political environment, you know?
Yeah, they all want, you know, the Republicans want smaller government until they're in control of it. You know what I mean?
Well, right. Right.
Then it's okay. Well, no. Now we got to kick the favors back. Now, you know what I mean? So,
but when you're desperately competing against Hillary,
oh God,
you've got to.
Well, they're
both
saying the same thing, man. It's pathetic.
They are. Like that's the problem.
Brother, we need to close the internet. We need to, you know.
Trump will be lucky to have a chance against Hillary anyway. He's got to be able to say something different. If he's saying the same thing she is, it's over.
Well, he's saying a little more, you know, like they're both advocating for basically restrictions on free speech. You know, it's the most idiotic thing to say that, okay, because the internet helps radicalize some members of, you know, certain faiths or whatever, that everyone's free speech or everyone's liberty has to be restricted or taken away. And it's such a... it's so despicable, just so shameless and cowardly and pathetic.
It is.
And they're both saying it, so right there.
It's typical to me of intellectuals, people who think that they know more than someone else.
Yeah, our status.
People who think that they have a better answer, that they have learned more.
I don't know if Trump quite qualifies as an intellectual.
Well, he doesn't, but
he's a savvy businessman.
But the successful modern society feel that they know more than the unsuccessful modern society. And they feel like they're the smart ones and that they have the answer and that the way they're living their life is the way that everyone should live their life.
Right. And, you know.
Very typical of these. Of our society. But the reality is that people have a good thing going for the most part where they're at. And it can be different.
Yeah, I mean, they were trying so hard with that. So much has happened since we've had a podcast last, but with that attack in Paris, they were trying so hard to tie it to Syrian refugees. And all those attackers were either from Paris or Belgium. Yeah, I mean, they were all naturally born citizens there or whatever. The same thing with that idiot in San Bernardino shooting up his workplace. You know, right. He was an American citizen. His wife was, you know, married and brought from another country. But, you know, they seize on those things and try to exploit them. You know, well, we need more gun control. You know, we need more internet. You know, we need more stricter control of the internet. You know, it's pathetic, dude.
But I'm afraid it's going to come no matter what.
It'll come if we let it, but, you know.
Who's going to combine? Who's going to unite now?
Well, you know, that's the thing is that.
But we've already become separated.
You have two choices. I look at it as more. You can live in fear and hand more and more of. You know, or I don't want to collectivize, but I'm saying in general, we can live in fear or, you know, and hand more and more of our freedom and liberty over to these people who that's what they want. You know, I'm not saying they're making these things happen, but when it happens, they're definitely going to exploit them. You know, you never let a crisis go to waste.
That's right.
Or, you know, if you look at these attacks, they're autonomous, you know, largely autonomous, attacks. You know, there's no real people directing them. It's kind of like they've been
right.
So, you know, how is this central power, you know, or centralized force going to respond to that? You know, if you have an autonomous attack, the best defense to that is an autonomous defense. It's
right.
People, you know, taking responsibility for themselves to protect themselves, you know, and you can't absolutely. Do that if every time something like this happens, you have a millions of people trying to say, we need more gun control or passing all these laws or saying we need to restrict the internet and free speech and yada, yada, yada. You know what I mean?
It's such a childish approach. It seems so childish that, you can't do it, so nobody can do it. They screwed it up, so now nobody can have it. That's just so ridiculous.
It might be taken advantage of or a few crazy retard. You know, there I go using that word again.
Uh-oh. Curse word.
PC principal. A few crazy morons are taking advantage of it. So, you know, we have to take everybody's freedom away. Anyway.
But that doesn't make any sense.
I thought this was a Christmas episode.
This is Christmassy.
Yeah. Hey-o.
It's going to make it so I don't get the gun I want for Christmas.
Yeah.
No, that's true, though. I mean.
But yeah, I get you, man. What you're saying is, you know, it's Christmas and it should be a round thing, but especially around this time of year, you want to open your heart or, you know, to people. And I think that's what it's largely all about. You know, the tendency there is tempting and it's easy to collectivize people, you know? Oh, well, there's a certain element within this belief system that tends to act out horribly, so we're going to collectivize and judge all, you know, adherents to that by it, and you know, and then we're going to use that as a way to restrict their freedom or take right. freedom away from any, you know, from just about everybody else in the name of protecting,
right,
quote unquote, protecting people from it, and that's, you know,
no, it's
shameless,
true, but
it's
but
a
the
shameless
same
ploy.
One of the problems is. So one thing I'm often talking about in all these kinds of discussions is where is society's limit on what's okay to say and what's okay to think right now as opposed to some other time. So on the same note as some are saying, okay, here's this crisis. We should create these kind of laws and we should change our society in this way so that things are better in this way. This is very generic, but on the same principle, you know, I think that, so Christianity used to be very similar to to Islam.
Oh, sure.
Right?
No, and that, I don't know, I saw a video where people took the Bible and put a like they put the Quran cover, you know.
Yeah, and read pieces from it to people.
Yeah, yeah, and they totally thought it was from the Quran, you know. And
right. Right.
I should probably try to find the video.
Well, so what is it that made the Crusades, the people of the Crusades who wanted to go out, and anybody who wasn't Christian will just kill them, and God can decide and save them or whatever, whatever they were thinking, going out and murdering everyone and forcing them into to convert. So somewhere along the line, general Christianity has sort of evolved to where we say, okay, we're not going to murder everyone that's not listening.
Right.
There's a few radicals that still do, right?
Yeah.
Islam,
Baptist Church. No, I'm just kidding. Right.
But Islam, it almost feels like there is a lot of peace within Islam teachings also, just like Christianity.
Yeah.
But there's kind of some, I don't want to use the wrong words.
There's some troublesome elements.
There's troublesome elements, but there aren't any more troublesome elements than in Christianity. But the society norm has become, okay, you know, this was violent times a long time ago. We don't really do that anymore.
Well,
and they're not, they have a lot of people within their sect who they're not at that point yet, or, you know.
Yeah.
It feels to us as modern Americans, and a lot of other countries are kind of on the same boat, that they are a primitive version of religion, you know. Whether or not that's true time-wise,
maybe
is
you're saying
irrelevant.
Like maybe they were where Christianity was,
I don't want to say directly this is where it is, and it just needs to advance. But it almost feels like the way I've seen things evolve over time, like the way music played such a huge role in race in America, and having the kids get to know each other and.
Yeah.
Say, hey, you know,
blues.
These other kinds of kids really aren't that bad over the generations.
Right.
If you can expose those cultures to modern thinking, where you don't have to murder everyone who doesn't agree with you, well, then when their kids, when the old ones die off, you know, maybe they'll stop murdering each other, and you can still have the religion.
I think a lot of it has to do with, I have a problem with religion. I'm not a big fan of organized religion at all. Like, you know, I'm a Christian. But I look at it as a personal thing. I have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Right.
You know, but I don't go around trying to export that or force that on other people. That's what that's between me and what I believe.
Right.
I think when you try, but historically, and I'm obviously not a historian or an expert, but when you have any kind of power centralized in any body of people, whether it's atheistic society such as, you know, the U.S., you know, communism, Soviet communism, or a theistic or theocracy or theocratic, I guess, society such as, I guess you could say, like modern day Iran or you know, back in the day, you know, it's power and it's the state, or it's, you know, though that central group of people having that ability to use that belief system to incite others to commit other acts that they otherwise wouldn't if you like they said they just knew each other or
right
or whatnot. It's, so that's what right. I looked at it as the concentration of power, the concentration of you know, political power or religious power. It's that's the problem, you know, and when you marry the state, the power of the state and the power of organized religion together, it's like,
no, it's not a good place to be. Right.
That's, you know, it's easy to boil down. I'm sorry. It's easy to boil down and just say Islam is like this blanket term, you know, it's one religion, but there's lots of different facets to it, whether, you know,
absolutely.
There's a Sunni and Shia split, obviously, but there's also, different schools of like the Wahhabism, Salafism that is really exported a lot by Saudi Arabia. And that's where a lot of these radicalized, you know, quote unquote radicalized or whatever people come from is that it's not, you know, it's not just like a blank, you know, it's not collective. You can't just collectivize it. in other yeah. words. You know what I mean? You can't say, oh, it's all Islam. But there's really, really virulent radical sects that are financed by, guess what, the state.
Right.
You know, or, and some of them, not saying that they have, you know, I'm not advocating or saying what they're doing is right, you know, in terms of the way that they're attacking people, but a lot of it has to do, I think, also with the way Western nations have comported themselves or acted against that part of the world, whether it's outright empires or colonialism or, you know, modern day the war on terror, you know, just
right.
droning people from, you know, blowing up weddings or, you know, and I even know what's going on. So it's not this cut and dry issue, you know, it's
no.
a lot of facets to it.
No, it's not. And
but tell that.
I don't know. I think I am a person who does. I do think religion is important for people. And part of the reason I hold to that is that people find life to be extremely hard to bear a lot of times. And to be able to connect yourself with something that's bigger, whether that's the government or a religion, you know.
Well, I mean, the most dangerous
it brings
the most dangerous religion out there is statism. So
sure.
You know.
But you know, being able to cling to something that seems bigger and more important and more kind and more peaceful, these religions, this something that happens after you die, and mm-hmm. and the idea that we really should be trying to be good and doing good for each other. Now, you know, I'm if you can be a secular humanist and really be good and really work towards the good, great.
Absolutely.
That's absolutely as much religion as any other
more
religion
power
to
you.
Me.
Absolutely.
And this is what we did. This is what we made. A lot of America came from wanting to be able to be free in what they believe. And I support that completely. I want people to be able to believe something that gives them comfort, as long as they don't then think that they need to hurt another person over that.
Yeah.
That's where the line needs to be drawn, I think. You should be able to believe and live how you feel
right.
is right and good.
As long as it doesn't interfere with the natural or
right.
the rights.
Which as soon as you take another human being and want to force an idea or a principle or onto them,
yeah.
you're violating that freedom.
That's what, you know, I've gone through a lot of sea changes. I mean, anybody who's known me for a long time, I started out, in high school, I was just a skater punk, you know. I thought I was like, yeah, anarchy or, you know, punk.
Anarchy.
Yeah. You didn't really know what it was. And then
right.
I started going towards more, I actually ran towards more like the Green Party or, you know, I voted for Nader and, you know,
yeah.
so, and stuff like that. And I kind of trended away from that back to more of a traditional conservative, small government, I guess, minarchist. And that's what really, you know, over the years I've kind of seen a lot of, you know, all sides of it. And that's what really drew me to libertarianism or voluntarism is that you don't have to have any kind of codified moral ethics or religion, so to speak. You just have to realize that the ultimate goal is liberty, and that
that's
you know,
interesting
you,
that
you,
there's so
you
much.
You have no, you know, it doesn't matter where your morality,
yeah.
your sense of ethics comes from, as long as you realize that it's, you know, you have no right to violate the rights of others, you know.
Right.
And as long as you realize that, and I, you know.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me to see. So I, with my job, I get a lot of deep discussions in the lives of a lot of people on a regular basis.
Right.
And I see that the large majority of people, if not everyone that I've met, lives their individual life in a very libertarian way. They
yeah.
do. They don't realize all the things that they're supposed to be doing, and they live in this very... Here's my home. In my home, I live my way. I'm going to drive my car as fast as I want, despite the laws that they've put up. They're going to drive however they want. They're going to raise their kids their way, regardless of what's accepted out there in the books and the law. People are doing it in a very libertarian way. They're following their own beliefs in their own home.
And it's a lot of that's regional too, I think, you know.
Absolutely. which all goes back to the old school setup of our government, where the states and the areas had their own governments that were elected by their own local people.
Yeah.
Because in that area they would have a culture and they would cling, and they need, a lot of people need someone to lead them. They really do.
I don't know if they need it. Is that more of a need, or it's more an indoctrination? Like,
well,
I understand some, you know,
I don't know. So that's a good argument. I think there's both, you know, I think there's both. So there are leaders who give up and they kind of tell the people what they need, but then there are people out there that really need
leadership. Well, those are called tyrants. If you're telling people what they need, you're basically
all leaders do that.
Lead by
managers
example.
Managers at work do it. Parents to their children. We all do it. We live our individual lives that way.
But there's also a difference between choosing to follow somebody. Okay, so choosing to follow somebody's leadership and being coerced. So, yeah, okay, like you
sure,
said.
Sure, sure.
People maybe... Some
but
people
just in general,
do
there's
need
a lot of
to
people who are
have
out
some
there.
Kind of example or leader to follow, but they should be voluntarily or freely choosing.
Absolutely, they should.
To do that, not being forced to by.
Well, and the law should be simple, like
the
you've said many times,
of imprisonment or kidnapping, or what have you.
So. See, a lot of people don't realize, and you've said on your show before, that they're all violating federal laws on a daily basis. A lot of people don't realize that.
Oh well, yeah, the.
They don't realize that they're in their home and they're living as a libertarian under a government that at any moment could come in and say, hey, you violated these federal laws on a daily basis for a long time, and we're now going to arrest you.
It's been studied that everybody pretty much commits, you know, three felonies a day. So.
So a lot of people don't live their life that
way.
That's
what happens when you divorce or separate the law from morality, you know, or ethics, you know.
Sure.
Laws don't necessarily have to be moral or ethical.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It just has to meet the needs of the state. Right.
So
you know, people, that's just been a thing that's been really interesting to me, to be totally off the topic of Christmas.
No, man.
That I watch people, everyone that I've ever really met.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to think of a single person that I know that if I look at their life in their home, that they're not living in a libertarian type manner.
Yeah.
Living within, this is my home. Here I'm free to be myself and believe what I want and do this thing. And I believe this about raising kids, and I believe this about animal rights, and I believe this about alcohol and cigarettes and this about this kind of food. And I mean, everything is like their own free will within their home. And you're in my home, you can't tell me this and that. But then out there, they kind of forget that that's how they believe they should be able to live.
But outside the door, it's like, well, I'm going to tell you what to do.
Because
this
is where I'm in my home. It's like this, and it's great. So you should all live like that.
Right.
And that's where the arguments come from, because we all disagree on that principle.
Well, I know.
But if everyone would realize, if everyone out there would realize that they're actually libertarians.
That's the whole, are they? You know, I know.
They are, but they forget that.
Bill Buport is a really amazing guy at zerogov.com. He has a theory, or he's says that anarchists or libertarians, you're born that way. Some people are, it's just in your genes, you know. And some people, I think like.
That's the natural state of.
Well, for some people, but maybe not everyone. You know what I mean? So it. You know, you can't collectivize.
It's the natural state of the human mind.
Mm-hmm.
That you're an individual and you should be able to fend for yourself and feed yourself and shelter yourself. And then once you've taken care of yourself, you're naturally drawn to others and being with others that
we're social
you agree
animals,
with.
Absolutely.
It's the natural way, this libertarian way.
Right. It's always interrupted or corrupted by what?
Someone that thinks that they're smarter than you. And that living is better than what you're living, which is totally fallacy.
Because
minds are different. They're drawn to different things. They're drawn to different things that they enjoy. They're drawn to different certain morals, certain different morals. There's a lot of general morals that most people agree with. But
yeah,
you know, I think there's a big breakdown for the extremists in Christianity or Islam on the value of a human life.
Secularism.
And what they, well, true, but in secularism, a lot, most of the people that I talk to.
Which is fine. Secularism is just a separation.
They strongly, right, but a lot of them strongly value each human life. Where a lot of people who get into God or Allah or whatever, any supreme being.
Hillary or Trump.
There's a certain breakdown of, it seems, you know, this is totally opinion, obviously. But what I observe and hear people say, it seems that there's a breakdown of where the value of the human life here on earth and the value of that human life in the afterlife, where that afterlife is more important, and that you can destroy a human life if it doesn't seem to be worth much here on earth, and that it will be able to recover on the other side, and so that justifies taking that life here. You know, that there's a lot of that in the old Christianity when they were killing people and letting God decide.
Oh, sure.
And I think I think Islam is similar. It's not stated the same, but I think there's a lot of that. You know, you're evil, you're against God, you just need to die so that you're not against God anymore.
Or even Pol Pot or Mao, you know, like, you know, the progress of society is worth, you know, however many millions of people we have to kill to achieve it.
Right.
You know, the goal, it's the ends justifying the means, no matter what belief system is attached to it. And that's completely false. You know, that's where they go wrong. When you start looking at the ends as justifying any means, whether it's killing, you know, 100 plus million people in terms of communism, whether it's, you know, blowing yourself up to kill other people, you know, so that you can reach paradise, or, you know, all the atrocities committed by, you know, the Christian church and whatnot early in the day. It's always, that's the way it seems to me, is that the problem is when you believe that whatever ends you're working towards justify whatever means, that's where you go wrong, you know. And Bill, to bring him up again, Bill Buford said that, he says, you can never achieve moral ends by immoral means.
Right.
I think that's probably one of the most brilliant summations of just about any, you know, statement or fact. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Sorry. I totally agree. It never seems to be okay. It's never okay to break down and forget about all right and wrong in order to create right later. That just doesn't work. I mean, if you turned all these things into math, made them into numbers and tried to add them up, it would never come out. It just couldn't come out in the end.
Yeah. Does not compute.
No, does not compute. No solution. No solution. But yeah, that's the thing, is if the end and the means are both, each life has value and each person should be able to protect and respect each person's life and right to food, shelter, and comfort and peace. If those are the means and the end, there won't be a breakdown. You know? And that's where it's interesting, because now we're, here's a turn for your podcast. The teachings of the, whether a made up character or not, Jesus, in peace and love and charity and being kind to every person you meet and trying to see, you know, to me, I kind of extrapolate the things he said into the modern idea of walking a mile in someone's shoes, trying to understand where they're coming from and what they might be experiencing and why they might be thinking the way they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
If people could think that way, which we do, people do, the general person does. That's the breakdown somewhere between the general person that you meet and the large-scale government and the statements that you get from large-scale population-based numbers and
right.
goals. But the individuals, you meet each individual, and none of them ever think that, well, I shouldn't say none of them.
Very
you do
rarely.
Meet people that are sure. very unreasonable.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're usually been in prison a couple times, but but they're for most
or they're,
people
or they're in government.
Most people don't feel like it's okay to go and injure their neighbor or hurt them or force them to do things that they don't want to do.
Right.
The general person in your neighborhood does not think that way. Most of the people that you meet do not think that way. That's the reason. It's true that most people don't think that way, and that's why you can drive down a divided highway in two different directions, and we don't kill each other. We don't.
Well, yeah.
We trust each other
or,
to you're right to yeah. self-preserve and look for your own happiness.
Spontaneous order to some degree.
Right. So we live that way regularly, and yet
and
we listen to someone pontificating about the way society should be and who should have what right and this and that, and it gets more and more complex as more and more things are invented.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it's the old dichotomy or the old rub, you know, people can't govern themselves, but some people can govern other people.
Right.
So how does that work?
Right. Well, you know, on another, to turn the direction of the conversation, maybe, you know, we talk about a lot of people being able to free on their own and not stepping into socialism and all these kind of things. But there's another side of that also, and that I sometimes have thought about with technology and where, you know, so what is the purpose of creating technology? Why do we create technology?
Well, I mean, what do you mean, why do we? Why do people, you know?
I'm not trying to steer you. I'm just trying to help yeah. the conversation open up. But
what are you saying? Why do people keep innovating? Why do
right.
people keep?
Because why do we do that? To me, I think
to make life easier.
Exactly.
Or because they're
that's
driven,
exactly how I think of it.
Or because they're driven by ideas or to achieve things. They're driven
yeah.
by
so here you
a
are
desire
at this job.
To create something or to.
Yeah, you're
make
out there.
Their
you're
life
out there harvesting
better,
this corn.
You
you're
know.
Growing it, and you're out there with your hands, and you're pulling it off, and you're like, "This is so hard. I take
this
the whole
sucks.
Year. Yeah, this sucks." But you've got all these people out there pulling this corn off of here. We're pulling this corn, working all
sure.
year, and all we get is this corn. You know, it takes our whole months to go by, and we're
so
doing this
opportunity
with hands.
Cost.
So
or,
they're like,
right.
"How isn't there another way? Isn't there a way that
how
this could
I
be
make
done
this
easier?
Easier?"
And so
how could I improve upon this?
And this happens across all industries. This could be done easier. So eventually we make a way that this happens much easier.
Mm-hmm.
And these machines and these things that do this stuff for us, it does take away jobs. You know, it takes away.
Well,
and so eventually, ideally, we create enough machine.
But it may take away some jobs, but it also.
Well, that one
what
takes
does
away
it do?
One job.
What it also does is it increases the productivity of each individual. So you're able to work less but produce more, therefore your value goes up. You know, and you're theoretically you will be worth more to, you know,
sure.
your employer or whatever.
Eventually
but it
if
also,
we create enough machines
as you innovate or create new technology, it also creates other jobs in terms of maintenance
monitoring
or,
those things.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. So maybe you moved away from
but then ideally, the innovator wants to create a machine that can take care of that maintenance.
The innovator.
Or a self-maintaining
sounds like
machine so that it can do that. So people can be freed up to
talking about
be
AI
with their families
now,
and
Skynet.
Be with their, do the things they like so they have time
absolutely,
to
man.
Do these things.
More leisure time. Or
and ultimately, we create these things so that people don't have to do it.
Mm.
But then we're doing it so that that thing can produce food and shelter for us.
Right.
And so then you, the result of that is that you have to then share that with these people. It becomes somewhat socialist, communistic.
No.
In the way that it's delivered. So
no.
So look at agriculture.
I don't see how
But look at agriculture.
I don't get to see how you get from That's such a huge leap there.
It is, but put
it
all together.
I don't get to see how you get to see people innovating, okay, and self, you know, being directed by themselves to create innovations or to produce more or to make things, you know, less cumbersome, okay? How that necessarily turns into socialism, which, I mean, if you want the stricter definition of socialism, no, is the common ownership of production. And right. that, not, you know what I'm saying?
It doesn't have to be so socialism, but it's sharing.
Well, that I'm okay, but that's okay. Sharing is one thing, you know, that if you're voluntarily cooperating and exchanging, you know, that's the free market. You know, if you're saying, hey, I've used my time and energy to create this and I'll trade it for this and it's mutually beneficial.
But ideally under innovation.
That's not any kind
of... Each individual isn't having to do all those things to trade.
I'm not...
ideally.
I'm just saying, not each individual specifically. I think we're splitting hairs here now, but...
Right.
I'm saying each company or what have you, you know, you find a mutually beneficial way to interact and help each other. Or if you don't, then, you know, you go separate ways. So that's not socialism at all. It's the exact opposite of socialism. That's, you know, people working together cooperatively, willingly, voluntarily to help each other and also to obviously better their lives. Absence of any kind of state mandate or directive or coercion, which is what quote unquote socialism is, you know, the
right. And it doesn't have to be. I mean, we say socialism and we look and we see.
Well, I think that's the lie that they've gotten so good at selling us is that.
Well, we see the old school style and you see the people who are lazy under socialism and the people who want more power and more stuff. You know, you see the human greed side corrupt the idea. They corrupt the idea. So if you had an environment where all the people were willing and wanted to share, you know what I mean? Then you have a situation where people are providing. It's you know, it looks like
that's
trade.
Voluntary
it looks
exchange.
Like trade. Sure. It does. But as you innovate and have something else doing it for you, you know, so you know, you look at agriculture. The people every person used to have to farm all their own food.
Sure, yeah. You were working different. Because
your whole life was dedicated to creating the food for yourself.
Absolutely.
So that you would have something to eat and you'd cut
and
down.
Maybe you had something to trade with Farmer Joe down the lane.
Right.
Who maybe he grew more of this year, you know. But right. That's what I get back to is that, you know.
Exactly.
Voluntary. That's a voluntary exchange.
But
you know?
so now things have changed to these large scale agriculture where it's no longer a product. So we're in a time right now where none of the concepts in my mind can make sense because it's our technology isn't nearly able to take care of us by itself. Okay.
We don't have robot butlers like
we
the
don't
Jetsons.
Have robot butlers.
Dang it!
We don't have these
or iRobot, right?
Sky tower farms.
And why don't we? Because of government. We would have all of that.
We might. We might. But once that's happening,
we wouldn't even need
dilemmas.
Roads, man.
Let's say we've forgotten about all that luxury stuff. Just take it out of the picture to make the calculation easier, like we do in physics. We don't. You know, we calculate in a frictionless vacuum, but nobody likes to live in one.
It's hard to breathe.
It's hard to breathe, and you can't hold on to anything. Everyone's just flying around, yeah. Smashing into each other. But we'll make ourselves a frictionless vacuum here. And let's say all we're looking for, every person is looking for food and shelter, and that's it. Okay, forget about PlayStation. We need food and shelter.
So it's Fallout 4, basically.
Well,
I'm going to tie it back
to make,
in, I'm going
to
tie it back
good.
In the PlayStation.
No, it's good. Do. Should.
Cuz I really want
to
play that.
We
game.
Create our frictionless vacuum and we need food and shelter. And so an environment could potentially be created where a machine is able to set up a crop, use solar power to farm and harvest that crop and produce it at the bottom where the people can come and have food. And the people's contribution to that is very limited. Most people will be unable to contribute to the machine, but they need still to take advantage of its benefits. Okay, so it's a strange situation, I admit, and probably not reasonable. No. Probably there will always continue to be lots of resources. Of course, that's a, you know, that might be a pipe dream too.
Yeah,
are we really going to run out of water?
The
Earth is limited, right? Maybe it won't happen in our lifetime, but at some point, Earth will be limited.
I think you're not factoring in, like I said, human innovation or you know, yeah, there's limited resources, but there's also the human ability to make those, you know, find ways to stretch resources or find new ones or make, you know.
Sure.
So, you know, it's not a zero-sum game there. There's not a, you know, it's not.
Right now, a lot of people's jobs are based on the things that people just want to have. A lot of people's ability to trade is just on luxury. And if the world were to come to a place, so I'm a place that my mind is always going in these conversations is the zombie, is the apocalyptic place where people are fending to stay alive, which I don't know. So I felt like it seemed appropriate for the zombies.
So Black Friday. No, I like where your head's at. Let's go with it. Let's tie it back in.
And so, you know, I come down to, okay, what? Yeah. Yeah. What are people really going to need? What is it that people need from each other? If you took out all the crap, all the one day breakable toys and all the, you know, the bidet and whatever other luxuries that
maybe
many people's jobs are based on. A bidet?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. We could have a tangent here.
Anyway.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. I'll come over and use yours.
You should. You should. Anybody that's having any hemorrhoid problems,
you know where to go.
Miracle.
Call, yeah, send us an email. Or, you know, find us on Twitter. Hashtag.
Yeah, that's right. Hashtag wet bottom.
Wet bottom hemorrhoids.
Oh, crap.
So, yeah.
Now what was I talking about? a place that my mind that I think about sometimes with these things, this whole creating technology that can take care of us, but then what do the people contribute so that they have earned the products of these technologies? But that's not why. See, that's not why we create the technology. These kids that develop a way for the ocean and the sun to automatically desalinize water so that everyone can partake of it. There's no part in that kid's plan. A child's mind is never looking for profit or people who can earn and trade into the water. They want to create a way that everyone can have clean water and they don't have to pay for it. That's what what a child wants.
On a pony too. So
that's the innocent version of trying to take care of everyone. Which ultimately should be the 10,000 years down the road goal, that we've created a way that that our innovation takes care of all of us and helps us be comfortable and fed.
But
and
why do you go to work?
I go to work so I can have money.
Exactly. You know, that's why I go.
But I went into
that's
my
field. Primary motive is to.
I went into my field with a very altruistic perspective, and I still have a lot of that
absolutely.
In my mind.
I have a high amount of respect for that, man.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
And I think the large majority of people that I went to school with feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very rare person within your medical school that is someone who's out there going on to make lots of money off people by tricking people into taking certain medicine. That's a super rare thing.
Unless they're doing boob jobs.
Well, so there are people doing that stuff. But I know
if that's what people want, they're providing a service. Sure, absolutely.
I've met several plastic surgeons in my training who they really don't do regular boob jobs.
They help. They probably help.
They do people who
mastectomies
have
mastectomies or
absolutely.
Yeah, that's great.
And that's their work.
Absolutely,
And they take a lot of pride in it, and they should, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, the truly altruistic perspective is a place where we are trying to innovate to provide comforts and luxuries mm-hmm. to anyone.
Right.
Now that falls apart the same way communistic societies and socialist societies fall apart with people who are lazy and unwilling to contribute or feel like they don't need to contribute. And it's normal. I would feel the same way. It breaks down the normal human
experience.
Most
of those people are in government. I mean, no, they are. They're feeding off of people. Off of people who actually do contribute, who actually do go out there and create these things.
Right, but who wouldn't? If someone had an opportunity to take that step, I think that
a lot of people wouldn't. Or else everybody would be a politician.
We'll see. But do people who go into politics just start realizing that as they're there?
No, I think
go into it purposely.
I think they have psychopathic tendencies. I think they're attracted to power and control. I'm not saying they're de facto psychopaths, but they have those traits. They have psychopathic personalities. Because why else would you do that? You know, you may initially start out, like you said, with altruism. Just, you know, you may start out like as a kid. You know, all kids.
Right, but that's what I mean. Is it realized?
But what happens?
Is it realized
way,
through experience?
And I really don't think they do. I think they go into it knowing, hey, you know, I can make a lot of money doing this. I can have a lot of power. You know, and if they don't start out that way, very few probably don't. They inevitably get corrupted by it. They inevitably have to play that game. It's just a fact.
That I think is probably true.
So
I think that's probably more true.
A lot of what you're saying, like
that you start out young and innocent and you want to get a good job. Hey, you know what? I like people. I like the organization.
I like people. What's wrong with you?
And then, no, I know, right? And they go into politics. Most jobs, I think, people go in fairly innocently.
Or naively.
Fairly innocently.
Sure.
Or naively. Absolutely. Right. And as they learn about it, they will either jump ship and go do something else.
Right.
Go get trained in something else. Or, hey, this works for me.
And like
this
I said, there are exceptions to the whole Paul. I mean, look at Ron Paul. You know, he was one of the very few ones that I think kind of managed to separate himself or remain above that. But he found where he wanted to be and what he wanted to do, and he didn't, you know, try to keep going above it. You know, he didn't keep trying to consolidate more and more power to himself.
No, it's why I've never trusted my fellow Mormon, Mitt Romney.
Yeah,
I've never trusted the guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and within my church, a lot of people were just, hey, we're going with that guy for sure. He's one of us or whatever, you know?
Right.
And to me, you know, I'm a...
Well, back in the day when I believed that you could actually change things by voting, I could see that, you know.
Right.
But I'm not going to say I never voted for anybody.
But looking at him at that level, for me it was always like, okay, the fact that he's within my religion and at that level of politics grows a huge amount of distrust for me with mm-hmm. him. That I can't believe that he can stay to the values and rise to the level of power that he has. I think that they can't go together. Maybe I'm wrong. It's an assumption.
I don't think it's an opinion.
No,
I think it's a pretty astute observation.
Yeah, I could never have created a trust there. So
altruism is one thing, and that, you know, that's great. That gets you, you know, so far, but also it's self-interest. You know what I mean? And that sounds bad to some people, you know, because everyone's more or less being collectivized these days.
Working for your own self-interest and keeping a perspective of another person and their struggles they're going through,
absolutely,
is where you can correct that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When you work in your self-interest, it allows you, you know, because no one else is going to advocate or work harder for you than you are. No one's going to take better care of yourself than you will or you should. So, self-interest, you know, that's a great thing, but it also allows you to, like you said, act altruistically when you can. You know, like if I take care of myself well enough, then that allows me to, you know, give something back to other people who,
right,
excuse me, might be less fortunate or, you know, having a hard time, you know. But if I don't take care of myself and my family first, I say the same thing in business
it's and not, medical practice.
There's no,
because a lot of people say, oh, you can't, you know, you really have to be careful about doing medicine for the money. Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful. You know, these are patients. These are people. And I, and my response to these young, these students and, you know, residents that come through is, hey, if you're not in business, you're not helping any of your patients. If you can't be in business, you can't help anyone. You've got to stay in business. Same thing with your personal. You've got to be healthy. You've got to be functioning, or right, else you won't be able to help anyone else.
Absolutely.
So first take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And while you take care of yourself, help others, you know. Is that Christmassy enough?
Yeah, man, I'm feeling it.
Bring it back to the old, to the old Claus.
Yeah.
The Santa Claus with Tim Allen.
We missed that one.
That's a great one.
Ho, ho, ho. So, yeah, man.
I always thought that was really clever, by the way.
Where he hurts Santa?
Yeah, where he picks it up. It's the Santa Claus. C-L-A-U-S-E. It's an agreement.
Yeah, go figure, right? Lawyers can't leave anything alone. No. Jeez, you know. They got their fingers in everything. Even, St. Nick. And that sounded a little dirtier than I meant it, but.
Look out, Santa.
Look. Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah,
good old Tim Allen, man.
So I'm trying to think back if we made any points through any of that.
No, you know, it's fun, man, because we started out, you know, this is kind of impromptu, off the cuff. You know, I didn't even know if you were going to make it today. And
Right.
I've been, like I said, we've been running around so much. And
I'm the goodness of my heart.
This is actually the second time you've been here.
And right.
The first time didn't go so well. It went well for me.
Well,
yeah, it went well until about 30 minutes in. And then
our innovative technology didn't support us very well.
I think I got EMP'd or something.
Maybe.
<you know>?
Maybe.
No, so or droned or, you know.
That's right.
No, it was just.
I did go see the Muse drones tour.
Yeah.
Speaking of drones.
What'd you think?
Oh, I liked it. I mean, I like Muse. A lot of people don't.
You know, I do. I don't listen to them a lot, but what I've heard, I enjoy to an extent. They always reminded me of like a angrier or Radiohead. You know, they have
I've always tried to decide what comparison I have for them and Radiohead, because there's
less,
a certain similarity there.
Less artsy, less cerebral, maybe Radiohead, more.
Maybe less cerebral. Yeah, maybe that's a good way to say it. I used to say, you know, they're doing what Radiohead might have done if they wouldn't have turned all digital.
Right.
But I've kind of realized that's not really true either.
No.
They're highly digital as well.
But they're way more guitar driven and a little bit harder, I would say.
Right.
At least what I've heard.
And that comes from him being actually a really great guitarist, which I was not expecting. I mean, he's good, but I've on the album it sounds like there's a lot of,
you never know,
digitized
right.
stuff and synthesized this and that.
What's filled in.
But seeing him playing live was impressive to me.
Nice.
As a guitarist.
Yeah, and a dang good one.
And thank you. Not anything like this guy here, but it was impressive to see the guitar work, and it changed a lot of the way I view what they're doing, but I'm taking way too long to make a point of absolutely still very guitar driven,
mm-hmm.
which Radiohead used to be.
Right.
Very strongly Johnny Greenwood driven guitar, really great guitar stuff. And not that there's not some really cool, innovative guitar stuff still going on there.
Right.
On Radiohead's music, but it's hidden. It doesn't sound like guitar work. And it doesn't,
there's so many layers and mm-hmm. yeah, synths and samples.
Well, I've kind of lost a lot of my interest in since kind of the King of Limbs stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I just haven't spent enough time with it. Or
you lost the faith, man.
Maybe lost the faith, maybe. But or maybe I'm just getting older and I'm losing my artistic sensibility.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I doubt that.
I don't know. But But it wasn't as I just haven't found it as driving.
We'll do a music show soon, man.
Yeah, we should.
You're very knowledgeable in that, and then you're kind enough to donate your music to the podcast on the way out here.
Oh yeah,
on the exit right. music. So
yeah, I'm glad to do that.
Good stuff.
Glad to do that.
So. We're talking about Christmas.
Okay.
What's the go-to Christmas music for you? Like album, song, whatever. What do you? A must listen.
So, I've never been a huge fan of Christmas music.
Sure.
As a what I used to consider myself to be a pretty serious musician, artistic wise, and you know, whatever I was. And so to me, cheesy music has always been kind of the antithesis of what I consider to be real music. And the Christmas music has kind of often been that anti-music to me. So I'm not a huge fan. Now, you know, over the years, you'll catch a song here and there that is beautiful and touches your heart. And
right.
And or the way a certain person might perform that. And you might actually feel, hey, that's... There's the emotion from that song, and you'll catch it. And people, you get that for yourself from song to song, different people from whatever they pick up. But, you know, there was an old, there was some country artist did some song one time about, I think it was World War II based story. And on Christmas Eve, the soldiers kind of lay down their arms and had Christmas or whatever. That was.
I know
cool
they
song.
Did that in World War One. Where
maybe it was World War One.
Where the
it's
Germans.
It's been so long since I've even heard the song.
Yeah,
it's probably been over 10 years since I've even heard the song or even listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that one had kind of had at a time in my life had some meaning to me for some reason, whatever. And then I like the Killers' "Don't Shoot Me, Santa Claus." Love it.
Nice.
Love
you you kind of turned me onto them. I'm not, you know, I skew a lot of like pop music or mainstream music.
A lot of my musician friends have.
You've turned me, you know, you kind of
have disregarded
them
the Killers
a little bit more.
And hopefully not to get, their newer stuff is really losing it too. But this is typical for bands, you know?
Yeah.
Bands, they just get too much of themselves or something and. After their first several albums, if not only one album, they start to really lose the raw, true emotion of what they had done with their music. You know, they had really expressed something from themselves originally. Yeah. And in their newer music, either they expressed it all or the person that they've become is not very interesting anymore. One of the two happens.
Well, they're not hungry anymore.
Something
you know
like
that.
They're
kinda like,
Either they're not hungry. Or they've forgotten what it was that they were expressing, or the person they've become is no longer interesting.
That's
possible. I don't want to hear about whatever you're singing about now. Whatever you're putting into that recording now, it ain't coming across to me. It's not touching me.
Not hitting me in the feels, bro.
Yeah, and so that, to me, that is a very normal, typical thing for bands. As bands put out more albums, I expect them to be less interesting. It doesn't always happen. Some bands will surprise you, you know?
Yeah.
But, and you know, and you can go back and say, a lot of people would have said that about Radiohead when they went digital. But a lot of us followed some of that stuff and listened to it enough to go, wait a minute, there's actually something here.
Yeah, they're doing something.
You know, I mean, even up to Kid A on Radiohead and all the way up through In Rainbows,
mm-hmm.
I feel it's just absolutely amazing. But it took me a long time. It took me a lot of listening to start picking up what was coming out of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how you listen to...
I'll get up on so many tangents if we talk about music. We'll never be able to do a show.
That's why I say we'll get back into it later. I'm talking about Christmas music. No.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, I like hearing new takes on the old songs, like... The Trans-Siberian Orchestra doing Carol of the Bells. That's like, you know, put in the guitar. It's,
right.
Know, it's still got that classical element, but it's super powerful and, you know, but.
Right.
And right. I actually listened to this on Pandora, this hipster holiday radio.
Oh, yeah.
And it actually was like fairly decent. It was like a lot of singer-songwriter stuff, you know? Yeah,
that's
so,
cool. That's cool.
You know, I enjoy stuff like
Maybe
that.
Maybe I'll have to turn that on for the holidays.
What'd
you call it? Hipster what?
I hate that. Yeah, hipster holiday.
Hipster holiday.
Yeah.
It's a horrible, horrible title.
I know. That's why I hate even saying it. Like I hate admitting that I even listen to the hipster holiday.
But if you're
channel,
getting a lot of singer-songrider, new people doing cool versions of Trent
yeah,
Rice
you know,
cool
that's
Christmas
when it,
songs.
It goes back into that innovation or making it your own, you know, taking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, I get a lot of my musical friends are you're kind of purist, you know, and they're really unwilling. It's really hard to get them interested in new stuff,
mm-hmm.
things that's new that's coming out, and I can be the same way. I can be very difficult to listen to something new and the new music, but I'm trying. I've been playing with some people for some church programs,
mm-hmm.
playing some music, and there's a young girl. She's like 17, and she's kind of. I can see some of the hunger for music in her that I had in myself. And so it's given me a little bit of drive to like be listening for new stuff and hear some new sounds and
nice.
And what's
yeah,
out cause there.
Yeah, because that's, but, you know, we used to play in a band back in high school.
Yeah, we did.
And that's about the age you were at, dude.
Yeah, it was.
Anecdotal story, but when you and your brother moved there, you guys were killer. Like, you guys just got the gift, man. He was such a good
Cody
drummer.
Came first.
Yeah,
Cody
I remember.
Cody came to town and paved the way for me.
I remember I met him on the first day of school. We were both skate, you know, I was into skateboarding. Oh, yeah. And he had, you know, I could tell he was a skater. I'm like, hey, man, you skate? And you're like, yeah, right. So we skated after school.
Yeah.
And then he's like, yeah, come to my house, you know. And I go in there, he's got his drum set up, you know. sits down and played. And I mean, it's a scrawny ass, like 13. I mean, we were in freshman year, so, you know, probably 14.
I don't know if there was ever anyone that was smaller than me, it was him.
And, dude, you could just see that, you know, when somebody's doing something that they're born to do or they have a gift for. And I didn't know anything about, you know, much about drumming, but I just knew he had it at that moment. And then
he did, too.
You too, man. Your whole family's just got that musical streak, so. You should have been the Partridge Family. Touring around.
Nice. We should have.
Just way less gingery.
A little bit less red. Yeah.
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 All
right. Although Cody grows a red beard now.
Red beard.
Yeah. Well, those are the days. Those are the days. Maybe this is a lull.
All right. Well, I want to wrap this up. Anything else you want to touch on?
We've touched on so much, I don't even know what we've said.
Yeah, well,
probably
that's how
nothing.
You know it's good, man. Yeah, so.
You say so much and say nothing.
All right, well, this is the second go-around, and for me and Weston, yeah, like I said, the other part didn't make it. Maybe I'll tack it on at the end of this episode, a little bonus. It was going to be the Halloween episode.
It was.
So.
We're the holiday.
Yeah, you're like the holiday guy, you know. But, yeah, man, I've enjoyed having you on, brother. We'll get you on again soon.
Thanks for having me.
So, yeah, this is Zombies Government U podcast, and I'm David.
And I'm Weston.
Thanks for being on, and we'll see you guys soon. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and all that. We'll talk to you guys
later. Don't forget Festivus.
And Festivus for the rest of yous.